Until now, we heard, I think, a great number of good examples and good suggestions of how good practices should look into in practice. And also, there seems to be large convergence on how these good practices should look like. But now comes perhaps the most difficult part, and that is how to bring the good practices forward. We'll have a look at it in this session, session four. We have Linda Falponi of the OECD. She's in the Directorate for Trade and Agriculture. And on the other hand, we have Michael Roberts, the SCDF Secretary, who will give a try and answer that question. First, let me welcome Linda. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'm coming from the OECD. My task is really sort of to, shall we say, re-summarize the Paris principles and try and make some sense of them for what your objectives are. As our director general, Mr. Angel Gurria, said, you often need a small army in the ministry just to deal with aid missions. So according to the OECD, some countries had, for instance, Tanzania had to deal with 2,400 quarterly reports last year, or there were on average 3 aid missions a day to countries like Tanzania and to Vietnam. Well, in response to that situation, which actually led to inefficient and ineffective fragmented multi-donor aid, the OECD with all the other member countries came up with the Paris principles. It was a collaborative effort. And part of that reason is for the Paris principles is there's some sort of risk of incentive distortions when we're talking about small, shall we say, fragmented kinds of sector funding availability, because part of developing countries and partners and even donors in many cases respond to those availabilities. I can do a service, and the other people say, well, there's money, so let's go for it. And this kind of distortion is not very effective overall. Then second, the risks of aid allocation distortions, because if we give money or money is set aside for a very small, specific, shall we say, specific sectoral kind of project, then we're not making the kinds of choices we need to make when we're talking about allocation for development. And this is a really fundamental issue, because we have to take the economy and have a holistic vision when we allocate. Where are our marginal, where do marginal benefits come, and where are the costs that are implied? So we will have opportunity costs unless we can find a way to deal with this fragmented availability of funding. And this also results in lack of absorption capacity, because in fact there's no fundamental structure being developed, and therefore we're adding on, but we can't necessarily deal with it in an effective way to make it even more productive. And there's also risks of undermining the emergence of local capacity for public management and accountability. And this is why we are proning the Paris principles, which are to remedy some of these more, shall we say, important or striking problems that have been going on in the aid industry. And I call it an industry because it is an industry, and it's just like another industry, okay? So the Paris principles is there to try and get it away from this complex of existing on its own just to go around giving aid. And this resulted in those 5, shall we say, main principles. And if anything comes out of this conference, and if repetition is the mother of all learning, by the time you leave, you will have learned why the Paris principles, what they are, and hopefully how they're being applied. So the 5 main issues of the Paris principles were ownership, that partners set the agendas and priorities and the strategies. So whether that be an SPS also, okay, it's the partner countries, which are referred to as the developing countries. and the donors must align themselves with the partner's agenda and rely on the partner's own systems. So they cannot go and say, well, I'm going to use my system because I like my system, but I'll give you the $3 million, but you're going to use my consultants, you're going to use my financial accounting system. That can't be done anymore. They have to be able, they will do it, and they still do it because only a small share, they've only achieved a part of those goals. But the objective is to move to making and permitting developing countries to take hold of and responsibility for their own development by setting their own strategies and letting them manage it as they see best. Harmonization, this is establishing common arrangements, simplifying procedures, sharing information among donors, applying good practice principles in delivering assistance. And one of those is untying the aid, which means you cannot say that, unfortunately, you must use consultants from here or there, or they must be this, or you must have certain things shipped, or you must buy this equipment from this country. So it's untying of aid. A lot of that is happening already. It's still not complete, and that's the message to donors in particular. Then we have the managing for results. Partners to adopt results-oriented strategies and donors to rely on and support these partner priorities, objectives, and results. So that once you give the aid, you have to step back, sort of like letting go and not being in possession of it because you have given it in order for them to take possession and take responsibility. And the most important thing all the way through the process is mutual accountability. Both donors and partners commit to enhance transparency and accountability in the use of development resources. Those are the basic principles, Paris principles, that we've been referring to in giving aid, whether it be for SPS, whether it be for anything, health services or whatever. And the OECD makes some further recommendations when we're talking about best practices for aid for trade. And with some of my colleagues, I asked them exactly what were some of these issues. And they, one of the big issues they said is when you're giving aid, what we recommend is that they focused on those aspects which are the binding constraints. Okay, this is absolutely important. If you want to reach your objectives, where's the binding constraints? Now, this forces both the receivers and the donors to make a clear analysis of where the issues are. It may be a supply chain approach. It may not be a supply chain approach. But where is the binding constraint? Maybe there are several. Which ones have priority? How do we go about it? How do we sequence these reforms? And therefore, that becomes also an important issue when we're focusing on the trade side. And then we want to make sure that these aid programs, and this goes back to the Paris principle, are integrated into national development plans. Okay, otherwise they do not have political support, they do not have financial support, and governments don't take responsibility. And it's imperative that all of those three work together so that if it's not budgeted for, then it's not a priority. And whether or not a particular agency thinks that it's a priority because they're an NGO or they're another giver of funds, a government that gives funds, that's not sufficient, okay, because it doesn't make for a successful program. And this is what the OECD Development Assistance Committee has said. And it's also a necessity to resolve to take political economy issues on board, which means you have to buy in the stakeholders. Because in this reform with Paris principles or recommendations for aid for trade, there are a number of shall we say, participants which are going to lose in terms of power, lose probably in terms of financial benefits. And somehow they have to be brought in. They have to be brought in to say that this method is effectively a much better one when we're talking of the whole development plan. And then in terms of best practices for aid effectiveness, again, this is speaking with my colleagues from the ensure that projects are real priorities in the national development plans, ensure you have political stakeholder support, and of course, and then this goes back again, and then they all say make sure that the Paris principles are implemented in all programs and projects. Okay, we're not yet there. We're making progress, as the ACRA Agenda for Action said in September. The use of country systems is the first option in delivering aid. It's starting to work. More and more countries are using it. We're not there yet. Well, we hope to be there in a few more years. Aid has got to be more predictable, transparent, and it's important that in both cases, the donors and the partner countries both jointly determine conditions on the basis of development plans. Thank you.
you. And next is Michael with some concluding remarks, food for thought, answers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I don't propose to go in detail. Obviously, you, Mr. Chairman, will be giving a report to the SPS committee during its formal session on this. Just a word of thanks before I go into the conclusions too. I hate to use the word consultants. There have been so many bad references to consultants. So let's call them researchers. The three researchers for the who presented this morning, I think they did an absolutely excellent job and teased out most of the themes that we've come back on this afternoon. My thanks also to the rapporteurs, to the speakers this afternoon, and also to the OECD for collaborating with us on this project. Themes that arise out of this discussion for me. The first one I think is mainstreaming. Typically in the sort of the development area, particularly when we're looking at it from an aid for trade perspective, we're thinking of mainstreaming trade into national development strategies. Now we've seen the SDF and the SBS technical cooperation in the sense of trying to raise the profile of SBS issues within trade and trade within national development strategies. But this term has been used in a different sense, in the sense of that perhaps SBS-related technical cooperation has got out of the mainstream of development cooperation. Perhaps we ought to be looking at mainstreaming SBS-related technical cooperation into what Linda has been talking about, the Paris Principles, Millennium Development Goals. Perhaps we need to be looking at SBS-related technical cooperation within that mainstream. It doesn't seem that the technical nature of SBS-related technical capacity building makes it distinct or discrete in some ways. It should be seen within that mainstream. And by extension, that means applying some of these principles which Linda and others have been outlining. The first one of these is perhaps this managing for results. What are we trying to do in SBS-related technical cooperation? We have perhaps an idea of this. We're looking to improve the capacity of developing countries to manage SBS risks and to demonstrate compliance with international trade requirements. But beyond that, we're not very specific in terms of designing indicators of the performance in terms of achieving that. And perhaps those indicators, those measures, are something that we should focus now on trying to develop in terms of measuring the impact of this area. Thirdly, I thought there was a very interesting dichotomy or distinction which came up with respect to the hierarchy of functions which Spencer Henson mentioned this morning, which was a very neat way graphically of showing you perhaps all the things that you need for a functioning SBS system versus the comment which was made by Kees van der Meer about the absorptive capacity. Now, if you then juxtapose that with the conclusion that the majority of cooperation in this area is being provided in a very fragmented approach, in a fragmented way. You're getting elements of the pyramid which are being put in, but you're not perhaps looking at the overall design. And there may be a role here for the SDF as a whole to look at where the overall, in terms of the needs on one side and the overall supply of technical assistance, and there seems to be a clear need of this overall coherence, coordination of the work of donors in this area of SBS-related technical cooperation. Finally, obviously, I'm trying to maximize the positive trade impact of SBS-related technical cooperation. I think one thing that's come out very clearly is that there is no one solution that fits all countries, and that one should be looking very, very much at the underlying economics here. Clearly, the signing of trade agreements provides opportunities, but those opportunities need to be realized by the private sector. So there needs to be that capacity. That capacity also needs to be enshrined in those national development plans, and there needs to be local ownership and local capacity. It's all very well perhaps building compliance capacity, but if there isn't the ability of the private sector there to benefit from that, then really one might be questioning the sustainability overall. Those, Mr. Chairman, are four big themes that perhaps jump out for me, but you will be giving a more comprehensive report during the SBS committee meetings.
I I'm sure we'll see these themes come back in that report as well. So thank you. And before we close, I'd like to thank all speakers and the rapporteurs from the breakout groups, as well as all participants for their hard work today and contributions. Thanks also for the interpreters bearing with us a whole day, and those who will participate in the upcoming SPS committee meeting. I see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock at the informal meeting on special and differential treatment and on the review of the SPS agreement. And with that, I wish you a very pleasant evening.